Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. Kevin Van Valkenburg joining us from sunny California. Good to have you back. Second time you've podcasted this week talking about Tiger. Bacon cucked me yet again, huh?
He did, yeah. I got to submit, this is a pretty thirsty podcast it might be because I think it's this is because I made a joke on the Hangout, the new message board for NLU, and you saw it, and you were like, well, I guess I better bring KVV back on. So.
What's funny, yeah, and there's a thread on there recommending podcast guests, and one of them was a post that just said KVV, 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 and I was like, oh, wow, this guy really wants KVV back, and I didn't notice that it was you right away. It's like, you know what, I do need to get KVV back on, and here we are. So
I need some Russian burner accounts to like just go ahead and pump up my profile. I will say this week, for the first time ever, I'm walking the ropes of the Riv. I'm with Kat and with Rory and JT. I got my face in my notebook. I'm thinking up some good nuggets for a future magazine story. And somebody along the rope line was like, KVV, love hearing you guys on the pod. That's awesome, man. And I was like, whoa. I just got recognized for the first time. Like the no laying up bump is real.
Oh, it's very real. You've never been recognized before? That doesn't.
Well, not seem... like in a golf sense. Not okay. Like as a because of my like you know Twitter posse.
Did they demand that you do the Gary Player on the spot?
They didn't. And you know what? I felt really bad. Like I literally halfway up the fairway, I was like, I should go back and give that guy the Gary Player. But I didn't.
That's the treat you would bring him. Is that I owe it to that guy to do the game.
So if that guy's out there listening to this right now, I want him to know he should do 100 push-ups tonight.
That's a new record, I think. A minute something in, and we already got our first Gary Player. I had to beg for that one, but
yeah, it's okay.
So you got to see most of Tiger, Rory, JT, I think, for a couple of days. But I do kind of want to start with Bubba. I do want to get your kind of on-course take and what you saw out there. But I know you didn't get to watch a lot this weekend after Tiger missed the cut, but I'm sure you've seen now that...
Saw some of the stuff. I think I can talk Bubba credibly.
But that's my point, is you're one of the people I want to talk to the most about Bubba. So I'll just ask it, is Bubba back?
I think Bubba is back. Like, if you were able to go and put some money down on Bubba to win the Masters at 50-1 before this tournament, you're in good shape. I don't think those odds are going to hang for very long. But, I think it's going to be pretty interesting to watch Bubba at the Masters. I mean, my initial impression just watching his post-round interview and reading his press conference was, God, this guy's such a weirdo. I mean, I love that he is a weirdo in a lot of ways because I think golf is better with weirdos. But, like, the whole, I was thinking about retiring 10 times and running my minor league baseball team and my car dealership. And then, you know, I was decided to come back and my wife, you know, heard me say 10 times that I should stick with it. And, you know, it's insane. I mean, this is a person who literally, like, the most important thing about his game is being able to work the ball, like, in both directions. And for a while, like, he was such a weirdo that it was more important to him to play a pink or a fluorescent green ball than it was to have a ball that he could actually work. And that had to be a huge part of why he dropped, like, 150 spots in the world rankings and was awful for 2 years. I mean, is it fair to say that we haven't talked enough about how one of maybe the third-ranked player in the world basically changed his equipment just to be goofy and, like, all of a sudden – he was completely awful.
I've maintained that stance for eternity, and that it's somehow we don't talk about this enough, how bizarre it was. And part of it being Bubba, it's kind of like, oh, well, yeah, he does a lot of crazy stuff. But like, imagine if like John Rahm switched to Volvic golf balls and was playing putt-putt balls like right now, how ridiculous that would be. And it is just like absolutely... I mean, he barely tested them. He didn't even take that much money for him. He took about $1 million from what I gathered. And the amount of on-course earnings that cost him, and I'm sure there's a lot of factors that contributed to his kind of downfall, but that certainly has to be one of them. And the fact that he's playing now without even a ball deal, and is basically, I don't know who dropped who essentially, but I think he was just done playing that golf ball. It's absolutely insane. It is. And we've talked about it a ton on this podcast, but I still don't think it's like emphasized enough. Like it should be talking about that on the broadcast, like about how he made significant equipment change to something that no one else is playing. He watched the World Long Drive Championships and decided his interest was peaked in playing that golf ball, as if he hadn't had enough success in his career with the golf ball that he was playing. And now he's back to playing a real golf ball, and he's back. He just won at one of the toughest tests in golf, and he looks like a scary person again for Augusta this year. It's kind of, you forget how good he was. It's easy to kind of write him off, and I don't think I'd written him off necessarily, but man, it was just like watching him battle today. I was like, oh, that's right. He is immensely talented. The lines he takes are some of the most entertaining lines in golf, and the fact that, like, shout out to CBS for adding the fairway pro tracer to kind of show that the routes he's taking to get to some of these holes, you would never have an appreciation for it if you didn't have the tracer on those shots. But yep, he looks like a bad man again and looks kind of scary. And I don't know, I definitely don't root for Bubba, but like I wasn't really rooting hard against him today, if that makes sense. I enjoyed seeing like that comeback part of that piece today.
I mean, I think you can, you know, say like, I'm not going to be a huge Bubba guy, but still enjoy like when he's in the mix and when he's like a character in golf. Like, I think we're all sort of worse off when Bubba is sort of an irrelevant figure. And just like to get back to the Vulvic thing, it is sort of like a very telling thing, I think, about how much the whole industry kind of runs on equipment dollars. And what I'm not asking is for like, I'm not asking CBS to like dump all over Vulvic, you know, as they're sort of talking about it, just the same way like we wouldn't get on this podcast and you wouldn't dump on Callaway, because it's, but just be like upfront about it. Be like, hey, look, he made a major equipment change. And yes, Vulvic buys ad time on CBS, but let's talk about that. Like, was that a factor? And bringing someone from Vulvic around to sort of defend it and say, well, you know, we still are a huge market in, you know, other areas, and maybe it wasn't the bright ball for him and blah, blah, blah. But it's just, it's so hilarious that everyone like who follows golf obsessively like we do kind of gets that and understands what a weird deal that was. And it's kind of goes unremarked on the broadcast.
Yeah.
He's an artist. He really is. He's fun to watch. The top tracer thing is dead on. Like, has anything in golf viewing improved golf viewing, you know, more than putting top tracer like on almost every tee and in the fairway? Like, it should be. That should be part of your budget for what you, when you put together broadcast a tournament, you should have that. And because it's cool to see, you know, guys like Rory hit it towering shots, and it's cool to see guys who play it low in the green. Like, and it's awesome to see Bubba shape things around. That should be part of modern golf coverage. Yeah. It should be like the equivalent of putting the shot clock up in, you know, like broadcasting NBA games, which frankly they didn't do for a long time.
Yeah. No, it is. It should be the norm, and it's kind of like, I don't know, for years when you didn't have it, every shot that came off the club face looks like it just goes dead right, and you otherwise you don't know what you're watching until the ball lands. But knowing what the ball's doing in the air just adds a totally different level of the viewing experience. I can't tell you how many times today, like with Finau and with Bubba, and like some of these shots are being played, how many times like when they'd hit a big hook into a green, like I would be like audible, like, oh shit, like that is sick, like. Some really interesting stuff, you know, just adds a totally different interesting element.
The silliest shot in golf, and I wish we could sort of get rid of this for the broadcast of it, is when you're sort of face on a player, and then he hits it, and the camera zooms up to just the ball. So all you're seeing is the ball in the air, and then it follows the ball to the earth. Like, that gives you nothing. Like, it's just a ridiculous way to sort of broadcast golf. Like, that's – be behind the guy, or, you know – be beside him and give me some sort of like what Fox does, where it shows you visually like how the you know, the drive looks or how the shot in the green looks.
Totally. Back to kind of what you were saying there with it, just kind of Bubba being a weirdo. I do feel like maybe just because he hasn't been in contention as much or at the top of the storylines, that he's kind of dialed back a lot of his antics, and he's just not given us too many like of the easy to make fun of pray for Ted Scott moments in recent years. And I don't know if that makes me kind of trend. These people are going to be all over me for like sounding like I like Bubba now. Let me clarify that that's not necessarily the case. But like I said at the beginning, like I just have a harder time rooting against him because I feel like he's kind of, I don't know if I want to say you called him kind of a weirdo, and it's like he is just a different guy, and I think is really uncomfortable with a microphone in front of him and yes. doesn't know how to relay what's going in his head, and it always comes off wrong, and he just ends up kind of looking foolish. Like yes. we were talking to some people in the press conference today that just said he contradicted himself like 8 times, but I just think he starts a sentence and doesn't know where it's going to go and just kind of wings it, and that's Bubba, I'm Bubba. But he comes
kind of the opposite
looking,
of Tiger, who never says a loose word ever, and it's Bubba's like just wandering from. I got a putting lessons from Aaron Baddeley, but it was awesome. But of course, it didn't help me, and I won't tell him that because he's a great guy, and just a rambling sort of like drunk at the end of the bar almost kind of approach to talking about golf. I mean, I think what I've always thought, and I think we've even talked about this before, but when he did that big sit down with 60 Minutes where he sort of like cut open a vein and like basically told you like all of his anxieties about his dad and his social anxieties, his fear of heights or whatever. I actually think that was sort of, most people like feel unburdened by like letting other people in and sort of saying, yeah, this is who I am. And this is all my kind of idiosyncrasies. I actually think that was bad because I think it sort of, it made Bubba actually think like, as he was walking the rope lines, like all these people are thinking I'm a weirdo. Like all these people are looking at me funny. And like, he just was, I remember the Masters, I interviewed him briefly outside the big tree there. And he was like, he was the most uncomfortable I think I've ever seen in my life. Just asking him about that interview. And just a lot of people do interviews, I just felt like, time to just talk about something. So maybe people stop asking me about it. And I was like, whoa, like, okay. I was just, thinking like, hey, I was kind of appreciating that you sort of put yourself out there, and then you're mad at me for bringing it up. It was weird. It was just weird.
Well, I mean, just look at this weekend alone for like how many times he contradicted himself. Like, first of all, with the long, and I'll love to bring up the long drive contest that he skipped in 2014 at the PGA because he wanted to focus on winning a championship. And then during the middle of this tournament, went and played a celebrity all-star game, which I was kind of beating him up for. Like, I thought, you can just kind of get yourself sore. You can roll an ankle. You can get pretty sore if you don't play regularly. Obviously, I was wrong there because he won the golf tournament after playing in that. So, but I just thought that was kind of ridiculous. And then talking about how he's going to retire if he got to 10 wins, and here he got to 10 wins, and no one really thought he was going to retire, but he, of course, didn't retire. So
everything about this week was kind of peak Bubba, wasn't it? Like,
yeah.
We have a great course, like a track that is a classic sort of amazing track that fits his sort of artistic style. We have him, bawling in the interview afterwards, talking about how he, 10 wins was all he ever wanted, and he thought about retiring and maybe retired 10 times. And we have him, participating in a ridiculous sort of sham of an event and pretending like that is more important than the golf tournament that he's going to go on to win. Like, all we really needed was him like berating Teddy and then like, crying about it afterwards to have complete like the Bubba bingo. It was amazing.
We should make a Bubba bingo. There's an idea right there.
Something for the Masters. Oh, right there.
I love that. Yeah. Well, he's probably going to be a factor in the Masters if he continues this. But on that note, let me ask you, do you want Bubba in Paris? If you were to decide now, if we're taking the team over to play now, would you want him?
I still am very hesitant to say that. He's just, in all of his previous Ryder Cup stuff, he's proven to be a very difficult person to pair with. That I've still never forgiven him for getting like drummed by Luke Donald in Medina. I mean, drummed. Like, he was down 4 after 4. And to Luke Donald, who's probably hitting it 80 yards past. I don't know. I mean, they put Webb Simpson on the team just to get along with him. And it was like it made the team worse just to sort of like cover for a guy who wasn't going to do that well anyway. I obviously, if he earns his way on the team, he's going to be on the team. But, he's got a long way to climb. I don't know. He's already talking about, I texted Jimmy and said, can I be a vice captain? And he was like, no, I want you on the team. But I think I might like just be a vice captain. I mean,
it's going to be such a mess this year. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
A better question is, would you want Kat on the team if he improves a little bit more?
Yeah.
A little bit more.
That's poor Eth and I talked about that a little bit, and it was kind of something I wasn't willing to even entertain before Torrey. And kind of waded very carefully into those waters by saying, like, look, if he is around like 20th or so in the standings, like, the team, his teammates are going to rally for him to be on that team. Like, those guys are going to want him on that team. So that's the situation. I could see it happening. Obviously, I don't know. I don't want to say obviously. I wasn't expecting him to make the cut this week. I wasn't expecting him in Torrey, for the record. But, I mean, he obviously had a, what was everyone walking away saying good things about Torrey, finished tied for 23rd. If you remember, he had to birdie his 36th hole to make the cut. Yep. Like, he almost MC'd that. Like, if he doesn't get a nice bounce, we don't have that. And then he was not close to making the cut this week. So, all right. So
how I quickly transitioned this whole podcast to Tiger.
You're done, Bubba, weren't you? You were just done. only things I had left to say about Bubba was he got one really great break holding his bunker shot today on 14 because that ball was going off the green. But those are the kind of breaks that happen to the guy that usually wins the tournament. Yeah, totally. So his putter can be extremely shaky, but he was 21st in strokes gained putting this week. If Bubba is in positive, that high up strokes gained putting, it's usually bad news for the rest of the field. So
he was, I remember seeing, looking it up during the, when we were talking about, you know, the ball and stuff, and he was still like in strokes gained, like off the tee, he was still like third or something, but he was like around the green. He was like 190th or something. I mean, he was losing like two strokes around against the field, chipping and putting and whatever. That's, which is crazy, right? Like that's, you know, used to have like a really like competent short game, at least. He was just a streaky putter, but my goodness, like how do you just not notice that dramatic of a fall off in your game and then just not want to go out and paint a Pro V1 green and pretend to play it?
I will say he was sixth in strokes gained around the green this week. He had his chipping on point. I mean, it was aided heavily by that hole out there on 14. But let's take a minute to talk about the new ChromeSoft Flow Motion video that Callaway just released. I'm not even sure I knew what Flow Motion was before this, but you may have seen me tweet about it. If not, you have to go check this thing out at callawaygolf.com/ChromeSoft or on any of their social channels. It's a hyperlapse video that shows how the ChromeSoft is made at the Callaway Ball Plant in Chicopee, Massachusetts. Just trust me, you're going to want to see it. It's only about a minute and a half long, but it is excellent. The ChromeSoft and the ChromeSoft X are different than any other ball, and that it's engineered with graphene, which is one of the strongest and lightest materials known to man. The graphene-infused outer core allows Callaway to engineer a golf ball with an incredible feeling, low spin off the tee, and increased spin around the green. I can personally attest to this. I played my first round with the new ChromeSoft X the other day, and it was noticeably different than any ball I've ever played, and they even added like arrows on the side now to help you line up your putt. The new ChromeSofts are fantastic. Get yours in stores now, callawaygolf.com/ChromeSoft. Let's get back to the pod. All right, so on to Tiger.
Yeah.
You got to did you follow all of his first two rounds?
I did, yes.
Okay.
Very close up. And, yeah.
So just broadly asking, what were your biggest takeaways or what kind of vibes did you pick up on him in person that we might not have picked up on watching on TV?
In person, I would say that one of the biggest takeaways for me is what a sort of kind of, I guess, happier, lighter personality Tiger has now.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's just attributable to he's happy to be back out there or age or honestly, which I don't feel like we don't talk enough about, like it would be easy to be kind of like angry and pissed off all the time if you were like addicted to painkillers, which he has admitted like that was a problem for him. And now like if indeed he's figured out a way to shake that, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that didn't play a role in being just sort of a kind of easier going person. I mean, I legitimately watched him like, I know they're friendly, but like pat Rory on the back and like, you know, say like, you know, great swing and like, not even just like his kind of cold hearted, but like genuinely do friendly things. And amazingly, like kind of ask Rory for some swing advice with the driver on Friday. And Rory was like, kind of, you know, taking him back and like giving it to him, like telling him, you know, that was much better tempo that you did on that drive on 18. And like, this is, you know, you're coming through, you're keeping your rear shoulder kind of more level or whatever. And I mean, if you're going to go get driving advice, getting it from Rory is like a pretty good person to get it from. Right. But like the idea that the way that he was interacting with both Rory and JT to me was really kind of neat to watch because that wasn't him. You know, 7, 8, 10 years ago, you know, he was just didn't have any time for anybody and was just a stone cold killer. And so I think you see like those younger guys, they so like having him back out there. And I think that really is legitimately a big reason why he does like being out there again, is because that's how he connects with people. Those are his, you know, I don't know that he has a ton of close friends. Some of that is conjecture on my part, but I think, you know, that's a big reason why he likes doing this, is because he can sort of actually have the ear of people who he respects and likes and are golf nerds like he is.
I've found it interesting how in recent years, you know, he's in the press conferences he does leading up to an event and coming back, he's talking about, it's just good to be out here with the boys again. It's like, mm-hmm. In his 20s and 30s, did you ever hear him say that?
No.
Or is he talking about, he's talking about dominating people, right?
Yeah.
He just wanted to win and didn't care at what cost. And now he's just, yeah, it's great to be out here with the boys again. It's like, what, really? Like, that's good for him if that's kind of the attitude. You know, if maybe he does view this as like the epilogue to his career, and he does just in general just enjoy like the company of the guys out there and being out there and feeling like he has kind of a purpose rather than, you know, toiling away injured and not being able to get off the couch, I'm sure just kind of changed his perspective on things.
How about that picture of him and Phil too? Like when they saw each other on the range. I mean, obviously they've, you know, the President's Cup stuff, like they've hugged and they've certainly been friendly and stuff before, but just like the joy on each of their faces about like, hey man, like look at us, like a couple California kids back at Riv, you know, isn't that kind of a fun? And you could tell like, they were both really genuinely happy to see one another. And they were next to each other on the range on Friday too. I mean, it's like they would have, you know, been as far away from each other as possible. Or Phil would have like in a needy way, like wanted to go stand by him on the range, and Tiger would have just completely iced him. And that's just not the way it is anymore. And I think that's kind of fun to see. Now, like game wise, I just don't think he is even remotely close. I think you made a really good point talking about this last week on the pod, where you were sort of talking about, you know, his rounds of Torrey, he really saved a lot with the putter. He was kind of just scraping it around. It made it look better than it was. And when the putter went sideways on Friday, it looked ugly. You know, he was totally on the bogey train. I mean, every miss on Thursday was right. And so he was kind of like, yeah, I mean, I'm fine. Like, I just need to really, you know, swing harder with this driver. I just getting, you know that with this shaft, I can really just crank it and it'll still be in the fairway. And then on Friday, he was just trying to crank it and everything was left. I mean, he had a snap hook. Parath and I were standing behind him. I think it was on, I want to say like 12, 13, no, maybe 13. And it should have been like lost ball into the Bronco like stuff, and it caught the trees and landed short, but it was as bad of a snap hook as I've seen him hit since he snapped that one into the ocean in Pebble in 2000. It was ugly. So I just don't know. He made the point that I thought was interesting, that he can't hit his irons like to the right distance right now. He's actually hitting it flush in a lot of ways, but he can't control his distance. And so I don't know what that is, whether, you know, he's not quite you know, comfortable with the swing he's making, or his clubs aren't quite sort of where he feels comfortable with them. But he said, you know, my whole career I've hit the ball pin high, and right now, like my irons, but right now I just can't. I'm hitting it long or I'm hitting it short, and I can't quite figure out why.
It's just reps. It's a process. You know, my feels are all off. You know, we're going to get all those. No, but that to me, that's not alarming to me. That's exactly the kind of, I don't know if rust is the right word, but the exact kind of a hole in the game that I would expect to see coming back after a ridiculously long layoff. There's some stints in there where he played, obviously, but we're talking about a serious layoff from professional golf. So you know, I expected some waywardness off the tee. I expected just kind of some sloppiness in there. I didn't expect the putting to be as good as it has been, but kind of also knowing that's not something that you can totally rely on to be there every day. Like, you just mentally can't get yourself that out of position on that consistent of a basis and rely on your putter, and you just can't maintain that kind of momentum. So yeah, I was kind of concerned when I went and looked up his stats for the week. The only thing he did on a positive strokes gained putting basis for the week was on Thursday. He was in the top 30, I believe, in strokes gained putting. But off the tee, yeah, he was 13th on Thursday, 129th on Friday. Off the tee, 125th and 115th. He also lost strokes to the field approaching the green both days and lost strokes to the field around the green both days. So legitimately, the only thing he did well was putt it well on Thursday. But again, it's a course that, you know, I think his lack of success there is kind of a bit overrated, and that he hasn't won there, but he's not, this isn't like a course that he can't really figure out. But Riviera is just a much more serious test than Torrey Pines is. Torrey, you can kind of hit it. I mean, the fairways are narrow, but you can hit it kind of all over the yard there and not get yourself in too much trouble. Whereas if you're hitting it just off the fairway in at Riv, there's, you're dealing with a lot more trees. Your angle and your angles into the green are where you get really punished. And so often, on especially on Thursday, when he would reach for driver and miss way right, he put himself in the worst possible spots. And I think he played, you know, the holes that he missed the fairway with driver, he played him like four over or something on Thursday. So, so yeah, but that's kind of why I wasn't surprised to see him miss. It's like Riv is just a totally, completely, you just have to, you have to be in control of the, your distance, especially with that firm of greens. Like your distance with your irons is especially important, and he doesn't have that. So, not surprised to see him fade. Disappointed, obviously. Didn't really give us a ton of great moments. He had made five birdies on Thursday, but yeah.
What do you think about Honda? Would you?
That was my next question. I don't feel much better about it. I wouldn't call it like, it's not like a similar test to Riv in any way, but it's windy there. There's a ton of water. There's some really brutal par fours that really demand you to hit driver. And I don't feel, definitely don't feel great about it. I could be wrong, obviously, but it's not, it's not the same as him teeing it up at a course with the track record he has, like Torrey Pines. You?
Yeah. I don't, I mean, if it, if the wind really blows there, I think he could shoot 80. I mean, it just, if it gets, it's not quite as, you know, there's not quite as many subtleties, I guess, as Riv. It's just, I don't want to see him dumping balls in the bear trap, you know, in the, on the sort of three hole stretch. That's brutal. But, you know, he's, you know, he could play it safe there if he feels like it's coming apart and be okay. I just don't know. It's that it's, he needs to play. And I honestly, like, we keep laughing, like saying, well, what if he won? Like, you know, I still can't quite get out of my head, like, well, he could drive it like badly at Augusta and he could know where to miss and he could shoot 72 and who knows, you know, he's not going to win, but he could sort of, you know, scrape it around. And then this, just watching him this week, I was just like, yeah, he's so far away from actually contending. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to just have this year kind of be, you know, just stay healthy and figure out what's next. But I don't know.
But what if he won?
Just what if Phil he won? Let's talk about that. What if Phil won for the first time since 13?
Well, I want to get to Phil in 1 second, but I want to know, like, first, what on the course, what was, I mean, first of all, it was just like a who's who watching PGA Tour live, watching all you guys walk by every shot. How many media people were out following that group, and were the galleries around that group as big as they appeared on TV?
On Thursday, the galleries were not huge. I mean, part of it is it's like 7 in the morning when he's teeing off or whatever. On Friday, the galleries were insane. I mean, they were just packed like crazy. And it was so hard. My parents were in town, so I walked a little bit with them outside the ropes, and you just couldn't see anything. I mean, even if you ran a whole, you know, half a hole ahead, you could barely get a spot to see something. It was really interesting. Like, you know, Rory talked a little bit about this after the round, about how Tiger loses half a shot a day to the field because of all the yahoos who, like, want to scream stuff in his backswing or want to say stupid things. And it's true. Like, when you really experience it, you know, right there on the ground, I mean, I've followed Tiger for a few rounds, but, you know, some of them were over in Scotland and stuff, and so it's not quite the same atmosphere. Like, at a place, you know, where Riv, like, they don't limit the tickets, so whomever wants to come can come. You're going to get a lot of people who are only Tiger fans. They're not golf fans. And so they're going to act really stupid. And, you know, it's really interesting just to hear, like, people so desperately want him to be good again. And it's still so much like, I still believe you're the greatest. I still love you, Tiger. I still know you can do it. And that's kind of encouraging. But there's also still so many people who just want to be like, Eldrick! LT Gray! You know? It's like you realize how awful that must be to just hear the same things over and over again. Like, or if you're Justin Thomas, be like, "Roll Tide, man, Roll Tide." Like, you're not making that player happy by yelling dumb shit. Like, I don't quite understand the impulse.
I said this after I caddied for JT in the pro-am at the Memorial last year, and that was just a pro-am. Like, after 18 holes, I was annoyed, and that was my first time going through it, at just the stuff that was being yelled, like, at him during that day. Like, hey, Snapchat! It's like that's it. That's what you're yelling at somebody. Like, yeah, that's a phone app. I've always wondered like how Tiger handles that, and if he truly hears it, like if he hears people yell his name anymore after hearing it for 20 years, like, do you maybe tune it out? I really am curious, and just the approach that he takes versus what Phil takes fascinates me. Right?
I mean, what's fascinating to me, I mean, Phil, you're right. I think DJ was making this a point on a podcast here I was doing about how like Phil can like nod to like 1,000 people a whole and give them the thumbs up, and it's like if he doesn't do it to the one person, like that one person must think, oh, what a jerk, that guy, you know, Phil, he blew me off. What's fascinating to me to watch Tiger is he ignores 99% of it, and how he hears like the occasional people that he does kind of acknowledge, it's, you know, it's almost always a kid or it's, you know, a military person or something. So it's like he is able to internalize it, and yet he will only kind of hand out the sort of the daps a little bit to someone who he thinks like is worthy of his like hello. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of cool to watch. So
before we go on to Phil, you saw obviously as a byproduct of being there, I'm assuming mostly to see Tiger, you saw a lot of Rory this week.
So I did.
Being the resident Rory fan that you are as well, were you encouraged by what you saw from him?
I was encouraged by the putter on Friday. I was pretty dismayed by the wedges, which is always going to be, I think, the issue for him. I mean, I'm a 15 handicap at best, you know, like I can't, for me to critique Rory's golf swing would be laughable, but I just don't quite get how he's missing wedges by 10 yards. Like it seems to me like as a professional golfer, if you miss a wedge, it should be by 3-4 yards, or, you know, should be in the not long and short, you know, that's what he's missing. I mean, he had a wedge, I want to say on 17 on Thursday, where, you know, he bogeyed both the par fives on Thursday with a wedge in his hand. And that just seems like inexplicable. Like hit that, you know, we should hit those to 10, 15 feet. And if you make the putt, great. If you don't, you move on to the next hole, but you should never fly that 5 yards long. And I just don't quite get, you know, I've made as many excuses for Rory as anybody. Love the guy as a interview, as an athlete, as a competitor. But, you know, he's changed the ball. He's changed the equipment. He's gotten healthy. You know, he's got his personal life in great shape. Like all of the things that I've kind of felt like, well, wait till this is done and then it'll be fine. That's done. And he's just not sharp like he was in 14. And that's the Rory I want to see. I think that's the Rory we all want to see. And hopefully we will. But to do that again, you got to figure out how to hit those wedges like a distance that's going to give you makeable putts.
Yeah, I think the most encouraging thing is everything you're saying, everything I'm thinking, everything we're all thinking while watching him is just kind of, I'm not disappointed right now, but just ready for contending Rory to be there. And we're talking about a guy that finished T20 this week. You know, he's not missing the cut. He's not, but at the same time, doesn't seem that close. So I'm encouraged by that. He is, I think I may have said this. We have too many platforms where we give takes now. May have been live show. May have been the podcast. But I said, like, watching him in Abu Dhabi take on the lines that he takes off the tee was my first real. And I've watched a ton of Rory, but my first real appreciation for exactly what it means to be a great driver of the golf ball, and that there were some corners he would get around that, you know, Matthew Fitzpatrick is 70 yards back because he has to take a different club because the narrow parts of the fairway that he's willing to put the ball in. It's truly, it's an incredible skill. Now, the only way you're going to greatly benefit from that is if you're taking advantage and stuffing it in close from those spots. So that he's not doing right now. I don't know. He's going to have weeks, you know, he's hit a ton of wedges to 20 feet and not rolling in the putts. He's going to have a ton of weeks where he hits everything to 12 feet and he runs in half of them, and that's when he wins. So I feel like it's weird to say. I don't never feel like he's in tight, like in super close with his wedges, but he's always putting from like 10 to 15 feet when he's playing really well, and he just makes enough of those to win. So
I think what's going to happen with him this year is that what really needs to happen maybe is that he just has one kind of swing thought one day that sort of takes it, like, you know, the first couple he hits, you know, hits it tight, and he just rolls off a win, and then it's like, oh my god, like I've won one for the first time in like a year, and then, you know, maybe he reels off like two of the next four, or, you know, three of the next eight or whatever. Like, he's, I think he's, I don't know. It is, if you're right, it doesn't feel like he's close, but like for him, it's so much about like confidence and sort of swagger that if he gets that back that he hasn't had for, you know, quite for a year or two, that's going to be really kind of fun to watch. And I know it's not the kind of thing you get back at Augusta, because that place is always going to have a little bit of demons for him, but somewhere along this year, he's going to tear up a course and shoot a 62, you know, like he did back when he was, you know, winning, you know, just dominating courses. And then all of a sudden it's going to be like, all right, he's in it. Like he's ready to go. He's going to win the PGA, or he's going to win the, you know, win the British this year. So.
Yeah, no, I think getting in contention those first two events there in the Emirates was big. It was, I'm not saying like good enough, but for him, yeah, kind of woke him up to be like, yeah, I still got this. Like I've got this. I'm not that far off. So I mean, not a great start to his stateside season here, but he's going to play a ton. And there's going to be a lot more to judge him off of than, you know, than these couple weeks. And again, talking about a guy that finished 20th this week, it's far from the end of the world there in that regard. So, all right, let's talk about your boy, Phil. Finished T6, coming off a T5 and a T2 in the previous 2 weeks leading up to that. Are we feeling that a win for Phil this year? Is he finally going to get off the snide? No wins since 2013.
It would be great if he did. I still think that like all that really matters to Phil is like putting more majors up. Like he doesn't need to win like a 44th tournament. I mean, yeah, it would be nice to like if he did it so he didn't, people wouldn't talk about it. But you know what'll matter is if he goes out, you know, on Thursday at Augusta and shoots 68. Like that's all that he really is. He's got to want. He looks, honestly, we were making a little bit big of a, too big of a deal about this in the broadcast, but he does look trimmer. Like he looks pretty in good shape to start the season. And, you know, with him, maybe he's got, you know, his sort of, maybe the fitness and the arthritis stuff is all under control. And maybe he's just like ready to go. And he's putting a little bit better and certainly driving. Like if he just drives it okay, like he's going to be in contention because he's going to hit great irons, and that's where he's at. Like it is kind of remarkable that he's 47 this year, or he'll turn 47 at the US Open this year, which is older than Nicholas was when he won the Masters, when it seemed like a huge deal. So if he won a major this year, it would be, you know, he'd be the oldest major winner other than Boros or whatever. So like, that's a kind of a remarkable thing that he's still this good, this competitive, like late into a career where the field is much deeper. Like it isn't like, you know, Arnold Palmer winning, you know, the Phoenix Open when he was 50 or whatever it was. Like this is a field where 100 guys can win, not 6 guys can win.
Right. So. And I mean, him at age 46, 47 and playing 5 weeks in a row, like that's no joke. I didn't even realize that until today that he played 5 in a row. When I go to a tournament, I mean, I do walk a decent amount on the golf course and I try to get out every single day and follow some guys and whatnot. I'm not playing a round of golf every day and dealing with everything they've got to do. But like after that week, like I'm pretty wiped. I'm pretty like
Absolutely.
That Monday, Tuesday is kind of a dead day for me. Usually just what some kind of jet lag or some kind of travel. Obviously like flying private and stuff makes it a little different for him. But man, 5 weeks in a row is a lot for him to have played that well. And the thing is back is his putting. He's top 10 on tour right now in strokes gained putting. Still not driving it great. That's not going to change in this far into his career. But I don't know. I think the putting thing is very encouraging. And he seems to have a little bit more spring in his step this year. And I think he really did deal with some fatigue issues last year. It seemed like he just couldn't last 4 rounds. But having some really strong finishes these last 3 weeks kind of makes me think like, all right, this might be – things might be – I'm not expecting like a huge career resurgence, but I do kind of disagree. I think he does want to win one really badly.
Just in some tournament. To
it's been almost 5 years since he's won. I think that matters to him. So that would just be – I think he would start believing a lot more that he can win majors if he, you know, won the – St. Jude Classic or something like that even. So
would you feel more confident in Rory closing the deal at Augusta leading in the final round, or Phil leading in the final round in the US Open closing the deal?
Oh God. I think Rory.
What would have you more on the edge of your seat, like tearing apart a no laying up towel like Jerry Tarkanian used to do with the teeth?
I would be more nervous for Phil knowing the amount of attempts there are left, right?
Sure.
And
right.
I think it's so easy to get, you know, if Rory has a 5-shot lead on the back nine at Augusta and blows it this year, people are going to say he'll never win a Masters. It's like, well, right. he's probably got like 15 good more chances at this, and it's so easy to kind of, So if I wouldn't, I don't know. I don't also don't really believe that much that Rory's really got demons. At least I don't think it relates to 2011. I just think there's legitimately issues with the or just holes out there that he has trouble with, or certain shots out there that he does have trouble with that are always going to kind of give him trouble more so than like than that back nine collapse. If anything, I kind of view that 2011 Masters as such something he hopefully draws back on. It's like, I can definitely compete on this golf course. So
I do think he gets tired of talking about it. The same way that Jordan got tired of talking about, you know, blowing it on 12, like every year Rory kind of comes to the Masters with like a different sort of like mentality of like, oh, I didn't play as much this year.
Right.
Or, oh, I played a ton this year. Or, you know, I'm not really like worrying too much about it. Or, yeah, I'm embracing the pressure. Or, you know, it's so it's like when you start talking your way around it, like those different kind of things, I think it gets in your head a little bit. Like, I don't think it quite, it would be impossible for Phil not to get nervous if he was leading on the back nine chinny this year, you know.
Oh, for, of course. Yeah. I mean, he's got to start seeing, reading the tea leaves and knowing. I mean, I think he's got one good run left in him in a U.S. Open. Yeah. I don't know where it's going to be or what. Yeah, he's got to know that it's kind of a last, but I don't know. Like the storybook way he won in 04, when it kind of really did feel like, all right, is this guy ever really going to win one?
Yeah.
Makes me think that it just makes me think that that guy is capable of rising to the situation in a way that not everyone is capable of, and he's proved that so many times in his career that
the Phil presser, if he won the US Open, would be all timer.
I hope he wears that leather jacket that he wore on the Unfairity. Well, see, it's actually not that hard to win a US Open. All right, we got a great look at Patrick Cantlay this weekend.
Yeah.
It wasn't his best weekend, but he gave us a kind of a taste for what kind of a player that he is. Are you ready to pencil him in for France? I hate to make everything Ryder Cup, but
yeah, but that's what we do.
That's what we do all year long. So,
if it keeps up, yeah, I'm big on Cantlay. I'm buying stock already. Like the swing, love the pedigree. You know, he's got the talent of Justin and Jordan and those guys. His career kind of got derailed because of the car accident and some other stuff, and I feel like totally like I'm in on that. I'm always wanting to go younger on the sort of the bottom end of the Ryder Cup because it just helps build for the future, and I feel like those guys totally embrace it. And I just don't like, you know, did Ryan Moore really like help out the Ryder Cup team that much? Like, it was okay, but like, obviously JT should have got that spot, you know, in retrospect, the idea that literally like one of the three most talented players of his generation didn't get that last Ryder Cup spot seems ridiculous. Like, it would have been such a good building block for Paris if they had given it to JT and instead kind of gave it to a journeyman. And that's why I think you just need a captain who doesn't really feel like he has to bow to the media pressure or whatever. Like, who, it would have lasted about 5 minutes if people were like, it's so unfair that Justin Thomas, he hasn't done anything. Well, I'm the captain. I get to pick who I want to pick. That's why they named me the captain, you know? So
as soon as balls go in the air, like, there's no fair or unfair. Like, it's totally a completely different scenario. And the one thing I kind of go off of, though, and I've said this a lot, but like that team that won 16.5, 11.5, that didn't have JT, didn't have Cantlay, and didn't have, and this could be for better or for worse, but didn't have Bubba on it either. Like, if we get a elite performing Bubba back that maybe has a resurgence in the Ryder Cup, like, that team all of a sudden becomes ridiculously stacked. And I know I've gotten way too excited about this the U.S. prospects, but man, I think people don't fully appreciate how good Cantlay is and kind of how, you know, well, Rahm has kind of emerged into a top three player in the world, but there was a time there where DJ, Spieth, and JT were the top three ranked players in the world. And it's kind of, that's a tough top three to, you know, those three guys are going to play four matches, and it's a formidable team, and it's going to continue to get stronger, I think, throughout the year. But man, we should keep a tally on how many times the Ryder Cup gets mentioned on this pod between now and then.
I was literally just thinking that I think you should give a t-shirt to someone who will keep a tally of all the people that you and I have put on the Ryder Cup team over the years talking about this, whether it's DeChambeau or Finau or whomever. Like, we've put a lot of different dudes you know, and you know, whether it was I'm stuck on not Lee McCoy, but the other Stanford kid, Maverick McNeely. We don't think, feel like we threw his name out there.
It's Patrick like, Rogers has been out there from time to time. I think Bryson, I think even I may have mentioned that a couple years ago. So it's going to be fun.
Free t-shirt to anybody who compiles the entire list of people.
Yes, correct. On KVV's dime. You're going to buy that. So. Other guys in the mix, Finau and Nahl were tied for two, and some quiet top tens for Spieth and JT, and also Xander Schauffele. Another guy could be on the back end of that team. So I know you didn't get to watch a ton on TV, but will you entertain me at least a little bit while I vent about the broadcast? Going to try not to beat the dead horse too much that's been covered, but I want to get your perspective on it too as a journalist and a media member. It's making sure that we're barking up the right tree kind of with what we're talking about with television coverage. So you've heard me say it a million times in a million different ways. I just want you to confirm that we're on the right track. If we're wrong, don't tell me.
You're on the right track. I think that criticism is totally fair. And I think that, any idea that it's unfair, I mean, it's clear that they're listening a little bit because of all the kind of subtle comments of like, we're showing a lot of live golf today. Like, you know, wow, isn't that your job? Like, they are so, the point that you made about DJ, like, you know, the number one player in the world shoots 64, you know, almost shoots 28 on the back nine. And they don't show a single shot of his until his second shot into 18. And then they show highlights. So it's like, it wasn't like there wasn't cameras on him.
No. They showed highlights from the second round. They didn't they didn't have cameras on him during, and that same nine on Saturday, Hao Tong Li made an ace on the sixth hole, one of the coolest par threes in the world. And they didn't have video of it. They didn't even mention it on the air. Like, I don't know how that happens. I always thought like every shot is essentially recorded in some way. I know like some tournaments like in Mayakoba and stuff, and they don't have cameras on absolutely everything. But I mean, if somebody makes like an ace on a Thursday morning, that I see that highlight somewhere. I can't remember hearing about a hole in one that I can't watch in some way.
Yeah, I don't. You know, it's inexcusable. And I mean, look, if you want to tell me like, look, we didn't have a camera on Lee, so we can't show that. Like, oh, okay, I understand. Like, I think it's an error because, you know, here is like a player who has a potential market of 2 billion people who want to see his golf. So maybe talk to CBS China and see if you can't, you know, get a camera that follows around the whole round and get a special feed to the, you know, to back home to Beijing. But the idea that the number one player in the world would play really great and it would be like it didn't even matter is bonkers. Like, what in the world? How does that even happen?
Yeah. It's just an enormous whiff. And like, I forget, I think it was Jay Rigdon made the point where he said, like, look, part of what we're relying on you for is to be able to handle the unexpected, right? I mean, like that's kind of what we're in it for in sports, is to be able to, you know, tune into something that's unexpected and exciting. So, and also,
wasn't it here, like, when was the tournament that JT literally almost won and they had
it? He bogeyed 18 to finish a shot out of the playoff, and the first hole they showed him was the 17th. That was like in 2015, I think, before he'd won the Masters.
And that was here at Riviera.
Correct. Or no? Yeah. Okay. That was at Riv.
What's up with Riv's being sneaky? Like, you would think that DJ and Spieth would be people that they would kind of, you know, want to pay attention to.
Yeah. I mean, he was only shown a few times this weekend too, which again, quite curious. But yeah, they brag about how many shots they showed. They showed 183 this year. And we had charted on the same Saturday 2 years ago, same guys in contention, Bubba leading. They showed 184. So like despite all the we're showing all this live golf, they did not show any more golf shots on this Saturday. First of all, that is a laborious, I don't know if that's a word, but that is a laborious task.
That is a word.
Laborious task of counting all those shots on that Saturday. Granted, we were aided by some alcohol, but we had some fun doing it. But I don't know. The thing, it just kind of, I mean, obviously I'm a diehard golf fan and I can't sit down and watch the tournament without being on my phone, like being distracted by something, because it just has no flow. There's so many commercials. There's so many ad breaks within, you know, they don't even go to commercial and CEO interviews, and it just has so little flow that it makes me upset. So
even if, look, ads pay the freight. So like, I understand ads, like you got to have ads. That's the reason why we can watch it. But why are we showing like tap-ins? Like, the idea that we are wasting 40, 50 seconds, a minute and a half to what to go to someone tap in is ridiculous. Just tell me, like, yeah, Bubba May, just tap in there, and we go now to 13 to watch, you know, Cantley. Like, right. It's just absurd. Like, I think it has a certainly a product of there's no competition, you know, so CBS is just kind of do what it's going to do. The only thing that can really change it is, like, if people get upset, if they sort of were like, yeah, you know, I'm disappointed in this broadcast. And, you know, I think that happens with every network. That's the only way that things change, you know. But, you know, the one thing that we always kind of notice is in the Open Championship is when you can watch the actual, like, Sky Sports broadcast, it's so dramatically different from what you see in the States and so much better. It's just like a minimalist kind of golf. It's golf.
Yeah.
How much would you pay to be able to watch just golf? Like, you could name a price and you and I would pay it.
That's but what I paid option. PGA Tour Live. I mean, that's just, yeah. It's not a full on broadcast. We're not showing every player in the field, but mm-hmm. you get, I mean, that's amazing. That's awesome to get every single shot from six guys, as long as they pick the right guys. So, like, mm-hmm. they hopefully, I would assume they got some major subscriptions to PGA Tour Live this week. You pair Rory, JT and mm-hmm. Tiger together. Like, people are going to sign up to watch that. That should be like just yes. the test case for if you build something good, then people are going to pay for it and get it. So
yes. And I think that's what that seems to be more where they're trending of, like, we're going to have a super group and we're going to put it on PGA Tour Live. Like, sometimes when the PGA Tour Live is awful, like, you know, there's been some, like, last year where we all kind of joke about, like, are you kidding me? Like, that's, you know, it's like Westwood, like Mike Weir, and I don't know who else, but, like, it's, sorry to shout out to those guys. Shout out to Mike Weir, but like, that's, you don't want to watch that. Like, you want to watch the best players in the world. Like, if you offered me, like, NBA, like, league pass, and I got to watch, you know, like, God, what are some of the worst, like Charlotte versus, you know, the Kings, like, every night, like, I'd be furious. But that's, like, the equivalent of not getting to watch good players, you know?
Right. No, it's back to, like, Hao Tong Lee. People should hear his story, right? It's kind yeah. of a big deal that he's over in the States playing, and he's this, I think he's 22 years old, and he's, like, got a lot of personality. Like, he's a funny yeah. guy from everything.
And he's huge too, right? Yeah. Like, when he shook Rory's hand after the, I was like, oh my God, this guy's huge. Yeah. Like, he's 6'4 or something. Like,
he just won in Europe. Like, show him two of his shots and talk about his story a little bit, rather than, you know, I mean, he showed every one of Kevin Na's shots, I think, this afternoon. That's fine. But if you're capable of that, then you're capable of showing a lot of other things too. So, I mean, Na finished T2. That was probably not the best example, but yeah. All right, that's all I had for my furious note taking. Is there anything else we missed from the week?
I think we're good. Did anybody miscut that was a surprise that we were?
No, I had thought. I mean, DJ almost missed the cut. First of all, yeah. and got himself back into contention, and almost that was extremely impressive and kind of an underrated storyline. I thought he was toast. I mean, he tripled number five on Thursday and was four over at one point, I think, and then battled back to make the cut. That was impressive. But no, other than Big Cat missing the cut, there wasn't anything major that stuck out. I mean, Riv is, we touched on it, but man, it's so cool to watch guys. Everyone's kind of ripping on the first hole being too easy, but it's like, I love that they just kind of hand you a hole to start with. It's like, here's your birdie hole. Now the rest mm-hmm. is going to get really hard. And there's yeah. even, like, interesting strategy elements to that first hole where you play it. And yeah. Was that your first time at Riv?
It was first time there. So it was a cool to get to see. It was fun to walk around with Andy Johnson, Friday Andy Johnson, and him be like, oh yeah, this place is pure, but this, I'd cut these trees down right here. They're an abomination.
I can't imagine how many trees he would remove on that property.
Oh my God. It would be super controversial, but it would also be super fascinating to see Andy get, like, his chance to tear apart Riv. So.
Did you get to watch much of number 10?
Yes. And it was fun. It was certainly cool to see both Tiger and JT laid up the first day, and then Rory tried to drive with three wood and got in a horrible, horrible lie, and then chipped in from the, you know, flew the green and then chipped in. And the other guys hit great wedges to a few feet. So it was, I did watch some of the other players as I was kind of walking around. It's fun, but it is kind of, you know, Andy was, I saw, did a write up making some points about how 10 is great, but it could be better. Yeah. Honestly, the funnest shot I saw all week was Tiger birdied 10 on Friday. And then he came to 11, and he was obviously needed to, like, make a run to make the cut. He hit a a bad drive left into the trees, and it looked like he was kind of in jail. And like I was standing just a few feet away, and it was completely like chaos all around. We finally got everything calmed down, and he hit a four iron that went about 100 yards, like maybe 6 feet off the ground, and then started to climb. I don't even know how that's physically possible. And then like started to draw left. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's still got something in there. That there's only maybe 3 or 4 guys in the world in golf history who could do things like that. Seve was one, but just the artistry and the strength and the balance that took, you know, he maybe hasn't figured out what it's like to hit just a normal shot anymore, but when he has to sort of summon all of his gifts and do stuff like that, I mean, the roar that went up, it was like, it was as big as any birdie roar when that happened, because everyone around just couldn't believe watching the ball shape in the air like that.
That's one of those shots that's worth the trip just to be able to see that, because you'll never see that on TV, no matter what kind of technology, or it's just not possible to kind of relay that. But as hard as we were on CBS, one of the best parts, though, like the only times I rewound to like hear what something was said was, you know, Peter Kostas was teed up and asked what he thought of the 10th hole. And he's like, I think it's too severe. I think the green complex is too severe. And like, that's what put Brandel on a broadcast. And that's the kind of things that he's going to say. He's going to make points and not be afraid to ruffle feathers. And like, that's not that controversial of a statement, but like, you just never hear that kind of analysis. And I give him credit for kind of chiming in, because I've argued that 10th green is way too severe, and I think the hole is a bit silly, to be honest. I think it really could be a great strategic hole, but it's not, because there's just not that much incentive to lay way back off the tee, and you got to get really just, and essentially you got to get lucky on your tee shot that it goes the right distance, right? And it's one thing, it's not really that fair to ask a guy to like, all right, you got to hit this 287 yards and not 292, because you're blocked out if you do. And I just don't think that's the most ideal fair test question of a player. So
yeah, no, I agree. I'm a big person who believes that like a great shot and a bad shot shouldn't be determined by just luck.
Right.
And that's, you know, I think you should get, it should be strategic more, you know, if you're willing to take on something like you have the potential for trouble, but you can be rewarded and good. And I just don't, if that pin is in the back, literally no one should hit driver, because there's no good scenario that comes out of that. I mean, I suppose you could drive it in the bunker and try to chip it close, but it just doesn't, most of the time it's going to run way off and you're going to make 4 or 5.
I do salute a hole that's going to just mess with guys. They need more of those. Yeah. They do. But I think I do think there's just some changes they can make to that green contour and widen it a bit and kind of encourage guys, as blasphemous as it is to say, encourage guys to lay up. I want guys to have an option with a wedge from the middle of the fairway, at least like make the decision off the tee interesting. But they'll get there. So, all right, brother, I'm going to let you go. Sunday night. Okay. Thank you for thanks for taking the time. Happy to get your on-course reporting, and we will be hearing from you probably hopefully sooner rather than later. Really enjoy having you on.
Thank you.
All right, we'll speak soon. Later, man.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything.